we're going to do is, as I wrote on the top of the sheet, Tzara'at thoughts. Issues about Tzara'at, a little bit of a perspective on a few interesting points within Tzara'at. So the first question that I have, as I put it here as the subheading, is Tzara'at a favor? Normally we would not think of Tzara'at as a favor. Right? There is the idea that Nigei Batin, Tzara'at on houses, is a favor, because when you knock down the wall to get rid of the Tzara'at mark, you will find treasures that were left there by the Kna'anim. That's an idea in and of itself, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Tzara'at itself being viewed as a favor. Normally, of course, how do we view Tzara'at? What is it usually taken as?
Punishment.
Punishment, and specifically for Lashon Hara, right? That's the standard read. Worth reading, the Parsha article in last week's Toronto Torah by Rabbi Ziri. He talked about the fact that the Torah doesn't say that. Right? It doesn't tell you anything about what it's a punishment for at all. The fact that it is a punishment is sort of implied, but not said explicitly. But it's true that's our assumption. If you take a look at source number one, classic Gemara in Erechin. If you ever want any Gemaras about Lashon Hara, you want that discussion in Erechin, Daf Tesvav, that general area. Vamar Yosi ben Zimmer. Yosi ben Zimmer says, "Kol ha'misaper Lashon Hara negoyim ubayin olav." He says, if a person speaks Lashon Hara, that person will experience Tzara'at. Shenamar. Here's a very interesting connection of psukim. This is one of those weird chains. Melashni baseser re'ehu oso atzmis. Hashem says, the one who is melashen, who speaks, right, but speaks against his friend in secret, I will destroy him. Atzmit is the key word. Uchsiv hasam latzmisus. And the Torah also has a term that's used in Parshas Behar, regarding a sale that is final. The item is never going to be reversed. It is latzimitut. Okay. Good. Now what? Umetagaminan lachalutin. The Aramaic on latzimitut is lachalutin. Okay. And therefore what? Utnan, and I have a Mishnah that talks about the status of a mitzvah, right? And we distinguish between what's called a mitzvah musgar and a mitzvah muchlat. Mitzvah musgar is a quarantined mitzvah. Mitzvah muchlat is somebody who is defined. This is it. He is now a mitzvah. If you remember from Parshas Tazria, if you didn't get too confused as you looked at the Parsha, and I don't blame you if you did get confused, but there are some signs on the body that make a person mitzvah automatically, and then there are some which make him a quarantined mitzvah, and he has to be examined a week later and see what his status is. But a full mitzvah is called a mitzvah muchlat. So what the Gemara says here is, you have to put the chain together. A pasuk about Lashon Hara says that Hashem will render the person atzmit, and I don't know what atzmit means. However, I have a word letzmitut, which means lachalutin, which is like mitzvah muchlat. So that means that someone who speaks Lashon Hara will become a mitzvah muchlat. You follow?
But can it also,
it's an awfully hard chain of events.
Can it also mean that a mitzvah muchlat could be something else as well?
They mean for punishment for something else besides Lashon Hara? You bet. And in fact, the Gemara mentions other things that can gain a person tzara'at. But we're not done. Reish Lakish says, "Ma'idichsev zostiyat taras hamitzora." This is a much shorter idea. This is the law of the mitzora. Zostiyat taraso shamotzi shame ra mitzora. He reads as a contraction of motzi shame ra. Someone who gives others a bad reputation. Of course, there's a much easier limud. Right? These are interesting, but the most obvious one isn't this. What are the famous cases of mitzvah in Chumash? There are two, one clear and one less clear.
Miriam and
right.
Moshe.
Right, Miriam and Aharon is one, and Moshe is the other. Right, Miriam and there are others in Tanakh, but in Chumash, Miriam and Aharon, after speaking about Moshe, right, Miriam gets 7 days, Aharon just for a blip. Hashem is angry at them, says the Midrash. That them, don't read it as just Miriam. It's Aharon gets it also, but Miriam gets the 7 days because she's the one who initiates the conversation. They still have the different system of penalties in hockey, where on the one hand there's a penalty for fighting, and there's another penalty for third man in. They used to. I was growing up. Okay. In any case, but that's one. And then the other was when Moshe says, they're not going to believe me. Right? So Hashem tells him, put your hand inside your coat, and he takes it out, and it's white. the mark of Tzarat. So in both cases, you said something bad and then got Tzarat. Now, in and of itself, the fact that they were presenting Tzarat as a penalty for Lashon Hara or anything else does not mean that Tzarat has to be a supernatural disease. The Gemara also assigns reasons for many run-of-the-mill biological ailments. Not only that, the Gemara uses the term Tzarat sometimes clearly to refer to a standard skin ailment and not to refer to a punishment at all. Nonetheless, that's what we mean. We usually say Tzarat is indeed a penalty for Lashon Hara. That's the way that we normally look at it. It is a punishment. And not only that, the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim in source number 2 sees the different types of Tzarat as a series of warnings to a person. He says, "Va'ikar hamuskam alav shu onesh al lashon hara." He says, "What everybody agrees is that this is a punishment for lashon hara." V'shehashinui hahu yatchil bekozalim, and it begins at first on a person's walls, meaning your first tzarat, not yours. A person's first tzarat is on the walls of his home. V'masak shuva hu amechuvan, and if he does tshuva, that's great. That's what God wanted to have happen. That was the goal. V'mamad b'merio, but if he still rebels, yispashet hashinui hahu l'klei v'sharsav l'klei beso, then it's going to get into his implements. It's going to get into the items that serve in his house. Unclear what he's referring to in terms of tzarat appearing on them. V'mamad b'merio, if he still rebels, yispashet el begadav, then it gets to his clothing. V'achar kach l'gufo, and then to his body. It's interesting because we usually think of it in the opposite direction. The way it's presented in the Torah is first tzarat on the body, and then it gets around to the clothing, and then it gets around to the house. But what he's saying is it's actually the opposite direction. The intensity is lower when it's external. But if a person doesn't take the hint, then ultimately it will end up on his body. V'zeh mofet mekubal ba'umah, he says that's a sign that the nation recognizes. So far, Tzarat is seen as a punishment, and the Rambam is framing it as punishment / warning. Rav Avadya Sforno says something beautiful in source number 3. And this is a really nice Svartorah. You want to sit down at your Shabbos table and talk about Tzarat and say something nice? Take a look what the Sforno has to say. V'chol zeh b'chemlas Hashem al shomrei mitzvosav. He says, this is a sign of Hashem's mercy upon those who keep his mitzvos. V'zeh ki omnam hamin ha'enoshi, hi atachlis hamachuvan b'mitziyut. He says, the human race is the goal of Hashem's creation. Right? Bifrat b'mitziyut ha'nifsadim, and especially among those creatures which are nifsadim, meaning those who are mortal. We are the goal of Hashem's creation among mortals. Ki hu levado muchan mikulam liyod dome labore b'muskalot u'masiyot, because we, of all the creatures, are the ones who are prepared to resemble our Creator in our thoughts and in our deeds. As the pasuk says, b'tzalmenu kidmutenu, right? B'tzalmenu kidmutenu is a loaded phrase. In our image, God says. So what that means, that God created us in His image, is a good question. You could take Rashi's view that it's in the image God designated, or you could take a more literal view of it. But what Sparno says is, don't look at Tzarat as simply God harming us. It's just the opposite. Human beings are the point of Hashem's creation. We are the reason why He created this world. A bold statement. So he says, Tzarat is merciful. If we had no value, if Hashem didn't care about us, He wouldn't bother to give us a warning. That would be it. You sinned, you degraded yourself, you degraded my tzelem by using it in this way. Off with your head. Right? What does God need to give us warnings for? Warnings are a sign of Hashem's love for us. You follow? That's the idea that Sforno presents. I think that's a really nice idea. Granted, I would have liked maybe a gentle warning, but not being like drummed out of the community. But you compare it to what it could have been. Not so bad. That's one. Second, the carbon asham of the Mitzorah. This is fascinating, and without Sforno, I never would have recognized this. Take a look at source number 4. Source number 4 is the beginning of our parsha. the description of what the mitzvah has to do once he has become tahor. So, Bayom HaShmini, after his 7-day purification period, on the 8th day, he takes 2 lambs, 2 male lambs, as well as a female lamb, also known as a ewe, as well as some flour mixed with oil, as well as some standalone oil. Okay, that's what he's going to bring. That's your first couple of sukkim. Then, v'lakach ha-kohen ha-zakeves ha-echad v'kivo so le'asham v'ezlog ha-shamen. The kohen is going to take the first of, or one of, these male lambs and bring it as a karbon asham along with the standalone oil. If you look at the breakdown of the sukkim, I listed it, I've had it in paragraphs. The whole middle part is the karbon asham, which is clearly the dominant part of the text. Right? You have 2 psukim that introduce what's happening. Then you're going to have psukim yud bet all the way through pasuk yud chet 12 to 18 that are about the karban asham. And then if you jump to the end, 19 and 20, the kohen will prepare the katas and he's going to shech the ola and he'll put the ola and the flour offering on the mizbeach and he's done. So everything else is this karban asham. What do you do with the karban asham? So it says, you take the lamb, bring it as an asham, along with the oil. He shechs the lamb in the same place where he's going to shech the ola as well, which is to say, the northern part of the room, right? The holiest part of the room. The chatas and the asham are treated alike in this way. The kohen is going to take from the blood of the asham, and he's going to put it on the ear of this person who had been a mitzora, who's now becoming tahor, as well as on his thumb, as well as on his big toe. Then he's going to take the oil and put it in his left hand, the kohen is, in his own left hand, and he's going to take his right finger and take from the oil and put it on the first, he's going to sprinkle it before Hashem, and then the rest of the oil he's going to put on the ear of the former mitzora and the thumb of the former mitzora and the big toe of the former mitzora on the spot where the blood from the karban is, and then the rest of the oil he's going to stick on his head. Okay? So it's not enough. The mitzora went through everything else. Now he's got to go through this routine in the Beis Hamikdash. So here's the question. I understand why he has to bring a chatas. Right? Why does he have to bring a chatas?
He sinned.
Right, he committed an avera. He did something wrong. He performed lashon hara. He has to bring a chatas. That's easy. Or you could make the argument that the chatas is like we talked about last week, if you remember, when we talked about the yoledes, the woman who gave birth. So we said that she brings a chatas after giving birth, not necessarily because she's done anything wrong, but perhaps it's just ritual purification. So he's been tameh, he has become tahor, so bring it for that purpose, like the yoledes. Fine. I understand why he brings a karban ola gift. When we talked about why there are karbanos, we said the karban idea is to express gratitude to Hashem. I want to give Hashem something of mine. You're giving something that you have no benefit from. You're expressing regret. You're saying, here, God, this is, I'm not taking anything from this karban. No one's going to eat from the karban. Yeah, the kohen will get the hide. That's about it. But what's the asham for? And this is the dominant karban. Right? This is what we spend all of our time on. This is the one that's personal. The blood goes on his body, the oil goes on his body. Right? What is the asham doing here? I would never have dawned on me to think about this, but Sfarno thought about this. So take a look at source number 5. The Sfarno says, you look at a karban in light of the person bringing it. He says, Kvar yis ba'er, it's already been explained, she'inyan ha'asham hu al-mal b'kodesh. He says, in general, the karban asham is broad. There are 5 different ashamos. But the general theme, he says, in a karban asham is for trespass on something that was holy. Chatas is for violating a halacha for which the punishment is kares. Asham is for trespass on sacred property. So he says, tzaras, it's for lashon hara, and gasus haruach, for arrogance. Those are me'ila bakodesh. He says, those are trespassing on that which is sacred. What do you mean? Because lashon hara, as I underlined, kima'amik me'hashem lastir etza, when you speak negatively about somebody else, it's like you are trying to get around God. right? To cause harm to somebody with your plot. You're going to say something negative about somebody else and not get caught. And he says the person who is arrogant is viewed as trespassing on God's space in this world. He quotes the pasuk in Tehillim. Something along those lines. I may be butchering the pronunciation. But somebody of haughty eyes, somebody of a broad heart, he envisions the world as his space. God says, I can't deal with him. He says, God says, we can't occupy the same space. The person who speaks Lashon Hara is guilty of Me'ila. He's trespassing on God's space, so to speak. He doesn't mention it here, but the person takes the sacred power of speech and uses it for his personal gain. There's that as well, right? The Nefesh Chaya that is breathed into human beings is Ruach Memalala. But what he says is simply that you're trying to get around God. So so this person who has tried to get around God is effectively guilty of Me'ila. So therefore he has to bring a carbon asha. And that's the dominant theme of what he's done, as opposed to the chatas in the Yom. Clear?
What happens if it wasn't because of Lashon Hara that they become...
So I guess what he will say is that you have to look at the various explanations for what Avera leads to Zaras, and see if they can all fit. The truth of the matter is, and this is the weakness in his approach, you can wedge a lot of things into Me'ila. Meaning, any time you use the power Hashem gives you in order to do an Avera, that's Me'ila. Right? Moshe Cordovero in the Tamar Devora says, that, when a person sins, they're taking the power that Hashem puts into them and using it for an Avera. So, isn't every Avera Me'ila in that sense? But that's not the way he goes. He doesn't take, that was my read of the Me'ila idea, of the trespass idea. His statement is, because it's like you're trying to get around God. So maybe you have to look at all the different explanations for what can cause Tzaraat and see if they can be consistent with this. Okay. Next point. I didn't bring you any sources on it. It's a straightforward idea. But we require a Kohen to look at the person and render the person a Mitzorah. Either of you a Kohen? No. Okay. Neither am I. Why is it that the Kohen has to be the one to look at Tzaraas? You could train somebody, get a big Talmid Chacham, let him learn Negayim, and then he can do it. Why is there a requirement that it be the Kohen? So Lashon Hara is fundamentally a product of making a judgment about somebody else. Right? You judge. You decided that person is a bad person. There's a bad trait. You want to get past that person and you need to say something to undermine him. But it's often an element of judging somebody. Well, the Kohen is the opposite. The Kohen is the one who helps people, including those the Kohen has had to judge negatively. But you go back to Aharon as the paradigm, right? The Oev Shalom, Barodev Shalom, making peace, greeting people even if they are Rishayim. The Kohen who works in the Mishkan in the Beis HaMikdash, right? He's a Chote. He sinned, but he, not the Kohen, sorry, someone comes to the Kohen with a Karban Chatas, right? The Kohen looks at this person, knows the person has sinned, and helps him bring a Karban to Hashem. The Kohanim are the ones who give a bracha to the nation. The Kohen davens for the nation. Right? Think of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Think of the fact that the Kohen Gadol is held responsible for the accidental murderer. Right? There's an element of responsibility for the community, so it makes sense that he's also going to be part of the cure for the Mitzvah's Lashon Hara, which requires that he diagnose him in the first place in order to get there. Got it? So I think that's a nice idea. And then the last one. I think it's the last one. Yes. Tzaraas on houses. Nig'ei batim. So the classic Gemara, which you've heard of, is in source number 6. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Bayit hamenugal lo haya v'lo atid lihiyot. Never happened, never will happen. No such thing. So why does the Torah have record such a thing? Analyze it and receive reward. Learn it and you'll be rewarded. Right? There are 3 cases that the Gemara says never happened, never will happen. What are they besides the Tzaraas one? Ben Sarah Umara, right? And? Nope. Irani Dachas. Ir Idachas, the city that is entirely committed to Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says of these three, never happened. Ben Sarah Amora, the Gemara says, cannot happen. It doesn't work because one of the requirements is that the father and the mother speak with the same voice, literally the same like pitch of voice. And the assumption is that since the male was able to have children, so presumably his voice, that because of testosterone, is going to be a lower pitched voice than a female voice. The Gemara has other points about how difficult it is to create a Ben Sarah Amora, but it's a Ben Sarah Amora can't happen. A Yerhani Dachas can't happen because you wouldn't be allowed to burn all of the stuff in the city if you had even a mezuzah in it. You have a community that has no mezuzah. Like, Yerhani Dachas can't happen. And by his Hamanuga, this house with Saras. And then, of course, there is one Tana who stands up and says for each of these, oh, yeah, no, I saw it. It happened and I saw it. I stood at the grave of the Ben Sarah Amora, and so on. But the Gemara says here, drosh v'kabel sachar, learn it and receive reward. What reward are you going to receive? So the Nevesh HaChaim, Rav Chaim Volozhin says, it's Talmud Torah Lishma. It's the purest form of learning Torah. The other approach, which is often brought, is that no, it's a matter of Musar. You'll gain instruction. So, parenting lessons out of the Ben Sarah Amora, right? The Maharsha said the parenting lesson is, see, you got to rebuke your kid or he's going to go bad. That's the Maharsha. He says, our kids today in 17th century Poland, 16th century Poland, they're just terrible. That's his approach. I've argued that it's the opposite. Meaning the Torah says, Vistru, so they rebuked him. They did rebuke him. And it didn't work. So I think the lessons about parenting may be more subtle in the story than a lesson of yell louder. The Yerhani Dachas teaches communal responsibility. And the Nigei Batim, the Tzaras on the house, may be a lesson about building a Jewish home. You can come up with all sorts of lessons. The point is pay attention to the home. But that last point about the Nigei Batim, the Tzaras on the house, brings me to a fascinating Zohar. Take a look at source number 7. The Zohar writes, "The Af Al Gav Deruach Mesava Istalik Mehahu Besa Adi Yitnitzun Besa Avdin Va'ein V'chula Kedain Isdechi Asra." He says, even though the Ruach Mesava, the spirit of Tuma, the spirit of impurity, the is not going to leave the house until the house, the stones, and the wood are destroyed entirely, right? Meaning that this whole thing is going to have to be destroyed. Without it, it's never going to disappear. Kedain istichiara. That's how, or asra. That's how a place becomes tahor. Meaning, what it's teaching me is the foundation has to be holy. The foundation has to be holy. You can't build a house on an impure foundation. And so it has to be removed. It's not like with the person, it goes away, whatever. The message that you're supposed to get from Nigei Batim, or at least one message you're supposed to get from Nigei Batim, not necessarily the message, is that the foundation has to be B'Kedusha, and therefore you have to remove the entire damaged component. That's the idea. Kedain is the Chiyasra. Alright. So that gives a little bit of something for Precious Mitzvah. Shkar.